Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 44, episode 1 of Der Daily Zeitgeist for Monday, August 13th, 2018. My name's Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. The year is 2251. White genocide has eliminated all traces of the Irish race, all save one. In the ruins of South Boston, one Irish dad struggles to feed his family as war threatens from all sides. One Irishman will take a stand. This summer, Mark Wahlberg is Soledad O'Brien. Thank you to El Borgi, Jeff Van Fundme on Twitter. And thanks to Bam the Old Fork in the Eye for calling that one out as an AKA. And yeah, I'm thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
It's all Zeit. It's all Zeit. All Zeit. It's news with Mr. Miles Gray.
All right, at Scott Bennett. You know I love you too, except my favorite album is Zooropa. So you should know better. The best album from U2, because I love that song. That was actually my favorite. That was the first U2 song I ever liked. My dad thought I was nuts.
All right. What was the one where the Edge like sort of raps, like talk sings? I think that was the first one I liked.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it's not a very good song.
I wonder, is that
I've gone back and listened to it.
I just remember just Bono going,
I feel lemon, lemon.
All right, never mind. It pales in comparison. You opened up some fucking Cormac McCarthy novel with your thinking, and I'm just doing old
racist
YouTube.
Cormac McCarthy.
Old Raso.
Well, we are thrilled to be joined in our third seat by the hilarious stand-up comedian Blake Wexler.
Thank you.
What's up, man?
I'm great. It's funny looking around this studio. If I didn't know how smart and great this podcast is, it looks like the worst podcast. Like just piles of Bloids, and then just various open mints with a couple left.
Yeah. Fidget spinners.
Yeah but fidget spinners.
When people come in with no context, I think they're like. And then I open it up by shouting in like a really insulting German accent, and they like start backing out of the room.
Yeah, I always watch when it's a new guest when you do that, and watch them go. They either go, they're stoic, or sometimes they just do a slight like, okay. So this is a vibe.
They pick up their phone and start looking at it. Like, who do I email about this?
How long is this?
Little do they know the door is locked from the outside.
Yes.
So. Well, Blake, we're going to get to know you a little bit better. But
please.
First, we're going to tell our listeners what they're in store for. You guys, surprise, Omarosa is a little bit messy.
Mm.
Nobody saw that coming.
No worry.
We're going to talk about the worst case scenario for when you try to pull that can I get a cup for water scam at a place that has soda fountains. We are going to talk about how the Unite the Right 2 rally did not go that great. It was not super impressive.
That's disappointing.
I know. We were all looking forward to it. We're going to talk about two articles that people are passing around today. One is from Stephen Miller's uncle, and the other is from the city of Philadelphia. It's about the mayonnaise wars. We'll get into it, you guys. It's amazing. We're gonna
speaking of white genocide.
Yes, exactly.
Mayonnaise wars.
This is the first step. We're gonna talk about Brett Kavanaugh's weird $200,000 bill that he racked up for Washington Nationals tickets, the Peter Strzok firing, and the fact that it is International Lefties Day.
All right,
shout
Ned.
Out to fellow lefties.
Shout out to Ned Flanders.
But first, Blake, we like to ask our guest, what is something from your search history that's revealing about who you are?
I would have to say recently it was how long until sunburn goes away. And how long until purple sunburn goes away?
What the
it
fuck
was
is
bad.
That?
Purple sunburn is when you don't go out in the sun a lot. And I got burnt so bad. It wasn't red. It was almost magenta, a beautiful shade of
Holy
magenta.
Shit.
Wow.
A tragic shade of magenta. And that's what I looked up. And
where'd you get it?
I actually got it in Ocean City, New Jersey.
On your body, neck?
Oh, I'm sorry. The Ocean City, New Jersey part of my body, actually, which is my torso.
Okay.
No, sorry, it's my lower back. That was a much better joke, because they have tramp stamps on that boardwalk.
Uh-huh.
It was on, like, my belly, my tum-tum.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did it get a lot of sun? Was it, like, a legit burn?
It was beyond burnt. I felt it in my organs. Like it was, it was so and humiliating because I should know better. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
yeah, yeah.
This happens once every 6 years. So
yeah,
yeah, I should know a lot better.
What is something that you think is overrated?
Overrated, I think all the hate on emotional support animals, I think is overrated. I think the hate should be on people who aren't responsible with them, where my girlfriend and I travel with dog, and he has an emotional support pass, and the hate that you get when you walk onto a plane with a dog, because assholes just let their dogs run around the plane, which is rude. Like, that's a problem. People are allergic to dogs, but I just think if the dog's just sitting there in the corner, you know, I don't have a problem with it. So I think that hate is overrated. I think they should dial it back for the pups.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I had to travel once with my dog,
mm-hmm.
and my girlfriend, Her Majesty, she got an emotional support pass for the thing, and I'm just so, like, overly considerate. Like, I'm in a panic. I'm like, if the dog barks, I'm going to be so mortified.
Same.
And bringing all this attention upon myself and, like, inconveniencing other people that, like, I was just in, a state of panic the entire time, and, like, every time the dog barked, I was like, shh, the fuck up.
Right.
And I was just losing it. Then, to make things worse, the second we got off the plane, dog about almost took the wildest shit like right off the gate, and I had to catch it with my bare hand because I
diving
didn't,
catch.
Yeah, no, I literally Chris Carter one hand scooped that shit out like before it hit the ground. Because
you tap both feet and
literally, because I just couldn't live with being like, oh, now I'm the guy whose dog just took a shit in the airport too.
Right,
like, I get a lot of panic because when you don't expect a dog to bark in a certain context, it is so jarring for me, like especially at airport.
Yeah,
so I have that panic. But, you know, no hate. If you could control your animal, more power to you. It's other people who just literally bring a dog on because they don't, like, it's a workaround for being able to, like, skirt, like, actually boarding the dog or whatever.
Right.
Then I have a problem with you.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And you don't need it to be emotional support, or do you now? Because we used to travel with our dog that was, like, very small. It was, like, the runt of the litter. And we got her specifically, you know, the smallest of the litter because there was like a size constraint that you couldn't travel with. And so the reason she was the runt is because she actually had like health problems that we didn't know about. And one time we brought her on the plane and she was not feeling great and escaped from the little carrying bag, ran to first class, and took a wild deuce in first class, like right in the aisle.
That is my worst nightmare.
And they almost had to land the fucking plane. It was like,
oh my God.
They were like,
it was
this
so
is
bad.
This is unsanitary. It was the worst experience of my life.
What kind of dog do you have that you travel with?
He's a mix. He's like part Australian cattle dog, part Whippet. But he's like a mid-sized
sedan. I'm sorry, what? Like the
sedan
thing we get high off of?
Yeah. He's part oxygen. He's part teenager huffing.
Yeah.
And part.
You got one of those crackers you put into an old Balzac balloon?
Yeah,
that's what you do in high school. Shout out to the Balzacs. Remember that?
No, I don't.
Do you remember Balzac was a thing from the early 90s that was
the
like...
The philosopher?
No.
Was that what he did for a living?
No, it was huge... Like, do you remember talking about it was like neon green? And it had like checkered pattern. It was just a big fucking balloon with fabric around it that people were like, "It's a Balzac."
Oh, I do know what you're saying.
Do they have
the
rubber band on it?
Yeah, they have ones that have the rubber band on it. Anyway,
and you would put Whippets in that.
So yeah, back then, by the time we were kids doing Whippets, you just had like the old bladders lying around for a Balzac,
right?
And so that would be good because you could reuse that to fill it with Nas or whatever, and you just do Nas hits, and then the room starts spinning. All right.
Cool. So your dog is part that.
Of course. Yeah.
So I'm
for sure. Obviously. Yeah.
I'm sorry. What's a Whippet?
It's like a thin looking dog.
How do you spell that?
Jesus Christ. Whippet.
Oh, yeah.
Is that even right?
I didn't even know that. That's called a Whippet?
Yeah. It's like a cute.
Looks like a greyhoundy kind of dog.
It does look a little greyhoundy, but like our dog's like a little thicker. You know what I'm saying? Like,
all right. Terminal thickness.
Right. Terminal thickness.
Blake, what is something you think is underrated?
Underrated, to go to my previous point, beach umbrellas. And I think I think it makes the beach a lot more enjoyable.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no question about that.
I'm sick of the sun. It's just who's trying to get tan now? You know, when you're like heading into your 30s,
right?
There's no need.
The
everybody on the Jersey Shore. Yeah. There are so many leathery motherfuckers on the Jersey Shore.
Yes, it's the leather, like a leather weathered white person's skin, like that you just want to pull to see if it,
it just tears.
Just how taut it is. Yeah.
Well, the umbrella is a good thing. As kids, we never thought about it because you just don't give a shit. But as you're more like, I need shade, and you go to you find yourself at the beach at like 11 in the morning, you're like, I am exposed for this entire day. Those little half tent outdoor things are pretty chill though too.
Those are sick.
Those are important. We needed to get those at our beach trip. Blake and I were on the Jersey Shore on the same island and didn't know it in early August.
Yeah. No clue.
But yeah, we had to.
Despite all the press.
Yeah.
Right.
I know.
I mean, you guys unplugged.
Well, it's weird. He shows up at the restaurant. You show up 30 minutes later. He leaves 20 minutes before.
Of course.
You follow in an unmarked black car. Whatever. Mm-hmm.
No reservations.
Blake, finally, what is a myth? What's something people think is true that you know to be false?
This is just going with the summer beach vibe, traveling, relaxing. My myth is that vacations are actually relaxing. I can't relax on vacations at all. I keep working. Or if I'm not working, I'm like, well, the industry has forgotten about me. They've totally forgotten. Not that they think about me that much anyway, but whatever thoughts were in their head, I have just issues. Or I don't know, with creative stuff, like you start thinking of ideas.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I'm like, oh, well, I need to write these down. And then if I don't, then I look back negatively upon my time, you know, trying to relax. Because, yeah, I don't know if that's a thing where if you reach a certain point in your career, you stop doing that.
Right.
But, yeah, I hope so. Or does that never end?
I don't think it ends.
We'll call Bob Odenkirk and get his thoughts on this.
And having kids makes it even less of a vacation, I will say.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's just an opportunity to cram your entire family that you're usually able to spread out over a household into a single room.
Because of naps?
Naps and just, you know, availability of space, whether you're staying at a hotel or staying with a relative, you don't have multiple rooms to stay in.
Yeah, you're just in the Thunderdome.
Right. Well, guys, we got a lot of news to cover. Omarosa back. Reality TV continues to define the zeitgeist, you guys, whether it's Kim Kardashian saying someone isn't interesting to look at or, you know, the president being a reality TV star and turning the presidency into a reality show. And now we have, you know, somebody who worked for him in the White House who is only known because of her work on a reality show, not success, just being, as Kim Kardashian pointed out, interesting to look at. That is the most important trait you can have. Mm-hmm. And Omarosa is definitely interesting to look at.
She's back. And she's messy.
Yes.
And she's got a book coming out.
She does.
So we know what the playbook is. Stir up as much shit as possible to get people talking about you. And the book, I don't know, off top, the White House is like, everything in there's a lie. No, there's nothing true. Like, they were very, very clear that everything in there is just basically slanderous or whatever. But, you know, she kicked off her press tour pretty impressively by leaking two recorded conversations she had during her time there. And it was, like, being so messy. She's like, they're like, oh, Omarosa, do you have more recordings? And she just looks and goes, oh, yes, I do. Like, and it's really really acting like a villain from, like, I'm back and I'm ready to fuck things up.
I think I remember her original season on The Apprentice, and that was sort of what she did. She was just like, oh, I'm gonna be a villain. Like, she just got it immediately.
Yeah.
Like,
but this is with the government now.
Right,
you know, like,
exactly.
You're taking her out of this medium that ultimately doesn't matter.
I don't think her and Trump know they're in the government.
Oh, in their defense, they don't know.
It's a new set that they're working on.
Right.
Oh, we're just on a different set.
Yeah. Where are the cameras?
Yeah.
And this is what happens when you put people like this in actual decision-making capacities that
100%.
Affect other people's lives.
So, yeah, the first one she talks about, you know, she had a recording of when Chief of Staff John Kelly fired her. And it's a pretty long clip that they have or whatever. But the thing that's interesting about this one, aside from him just hearing, he's basically sort of like does like a like kind of G's her up, sort of being like, look, let's make this as nice as possible because we don't want to make things difficult for you after
it's
this.
Like it's failed like, threats.
Yeah, like, okay, all right, I'll be cool. But this apparently happened in the fucking Situation Room. So she recorded a conversation in one of the most sensitive areas of the West Wing, where, you know, that's where, like, Obama watched the Bin Laden hit job, basically.
Alleged.
Yeah, whatever. Right. Yeah, if they got him.
Right.
But yeah, like, a lot of shit
Wolf
goes on the situation
Blitzer wanders
room.
In there by accident.
Yeah, but
like,
yeah,
shit.
It just shows you
damn it.
This room where so many important things have happened. You just can wander in there with your phone or whatever, just make a recording, whatever. So we found out that she got fired and it was whatever. Then the second clip that she dropped, I think it was either yesterday or today, was a phone call with her and Trump where he acts so Z-O-M-G surprised that she was fired. So apparently she was fired and she in the thing, she's like, does the president know about this? And John Kelly's like, look, this isn't a negotiable situation. Like, right. And just like, you know, tough geyser. So let's
be
hear
a
the
shame if something happened to your reputation.
Yeah, essentially.
Specifically, he said that.
Yeah.
Her sparkling reputation.
Right, right, yeah, as like an actual reality like star villain, reality show villain. This is the recording that she made when she talks with President Trump right after being fired.
Omarosa, what's going on? I just saw on the news that you're thinking about leaving. What happened?
General Kelly came to me and said that you guys wanted me to leave.
No, I nobody even told me about it. Nobody.
Wow.
You know, they run a big operation, but I didn't know it. I didn't know that.
God. Yeah.
Damn it. I don't love you leaving at all.
Whoa. God damn it.
God.
I mean, okay, so you can look at that call
how
two
will
ways.
We go on?
Yeah. You can look at that one of two ways. One is that he actually knows nothing about what's going on in his own administration, and General Kelly just calls all the shots, which right. is likely. It's conceivable.
Right.
The other is that he totally knew, and just because he's not really confrontational and he wants to be able to be the good guy, acting like, all surprised about it, like he didn't even know. Like, oh, really? The
what?
God damn it to me sounds so full of shit. Goes, God damn it.
God yes. damn.
Oh, yeah, you're so upset.
That was one of the worst performances I've ever seen.
God
like, just
damn it.
As a liar,
oh,
that,
yeah.
that was just not good.
And he is, if nothing else, a well-practiced liar.
Oh,
like, 100%. He lets out much better lies than that.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
I think there are, like, certain lies he's comfortable with or has convinced himself are true,
mm-hmm.
and this just didn't happen to be one of those.
Yeah.
Like, he was like, okay, she's fired. Okay, let me get on the phone with her. And
what's
it
going
just,
on? What right. am I reading about?
Oh, my God.
God damn it. And then he's as we were laughing, you can hear him say, I don't love you leaving at all. That's such a weird way to describe that.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
So you'll hire me back again? Okay, Omarosa, I gotta get going.
I gotta get going. Hold on, yeah. my Big Mac's here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Look, this sort of underlines the whole problem with this administration, too, is because now she's out and she's talking all this shit. Trump is on Twitter coming at her intelligence, you know, typical playbook when it comes to people of color who have any opinion on the president is to question their intelligence. But, you know, after that, the media, you know, rightfully noticed what has always been obvious. Like, wait, not a lot of people of color that are working at the highest level in that White House administration. So, you know, on the Sunday shows, Kellyanne Conway was out there, and I think she was on, I forget which of the Sunday shows, basically being asked the question, hey, can you name some people of color that work with the president? And it was a little, you know... She didn't have many ideas.
And Omarosa was the most prominent high-level African-American serving in the West Wing on President Trump's staff. Who now is that person? Who is the most prominent high-level advisor to the president on the West Wing staff right now?
African-American?
Yes.
I would say that, well, first of all, you're totally not covering the fact that our Secretary of Housing and Urban Development and world-renowned
I'm asking you about the White House staff. I'm asking you about the people
well,
the president is with every day.
Well, the president works with Secretary Carson every day. He's trying to break the back of the scourge.
Who there is in
and drug
on the White House staff right now?
And we have Jaron, who's done a fabulous job and very involved with, he's been very involved with Jared Kushner and President Trump on prison reform from the beginning. He's been there from the beginning. He worked with Omarosa and others of us.
Does he have an office in the West Wing, Kelly?
He has an office in the EOP, absolutely, the executive office. To the president, yes.
But not in the West Wing. What does that say to have not a single senior advisor in the West Wing who's African American?
I didn't say that there wasn't, but hold on.
Who is?
Me. There are plenty of people, if you're going by that and not by the actions of the president, which you probably should, then you should look at the fact that we have a number of different minorities. And the fact is that this president is doing well for all Americans.
Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I mean, just look at all the people he appoints to like judicial nominations and everything. He has a thing for white guys. I think it's easy to say.
Yeah, that's one way of putting it.
And at first, I thought she was making up Jerron. I was right. Like, oh, hell no. You just made up that fucking name. But it's true, though. There's a man named Jerron Smith who works with Jared Kushner like as a executive aide. But who knows in what real capacity that actually is. But, you know, again, it's not surprising. When you look at just, you know, again, if she's saying, look at the actions of the president, well, then I think that would also be clear to
that's
me.
That's worse, don't it?
Yeah. Look at the actions of our most racist
also, did
president.
You see him? When he had all those bikers at the White House this weekend.
Uh-huh.
And the one dude had a patch that said, I like guns and titties. Just prominently on his fucking vest.
In parentheses, not necessarily in that order.
No, yeah, but it was
but
wild.
In that order.
He's like, he's got his arm around these bikers and the dude, one of the dude's patches. All right, whatever.
He's like not that his base is all Harley Davidson riders, but didn't he do something like over the weekend where he's like split? He actually started talking trash on Harley Davidson, right? Because they're gonna take some of their operations overseas because of EU tariffs, I guess.
Yeah.
And now Harley Davidson riders like, well, fuck, do I like my bike more? Or,
right.
Yeah.
This big fat racist.
It's calling for a boycott.
I mean, like Trump is only at most going to be president for 8 years total. Those Harleys though.
Right.
They trademarked that sound.
Yeah.
You know?
If you take care of it and get their oil changed, if you can do that with a motorcycle, then they'll hold up for years.
I wonder how many, I don't know, what other bike would you ride? A fucking Honda?
Yamaha, baby. No, yeah, that's too foreign.
Yeah, that's too foreign. Like a Royal Enfield? Too English, too European. I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah. I don't know shit about motorcycles.
Hey, that's all good,
I thought
bro.
You would, Jack. You strike you should, me as a big hog guy.
With the wild handlebars like up here, above your ears.
It's great. It airs you out. It's terrific.
Yeah. Ride one to work every day.
That's actually a bird scooter.
Whatever. Tomato, tomato.
Yeah.
Harley bird scooter. It's the same shit.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. And we're back, and I don't know about you guys, I was refreshing my phone pretty regularly yesterday, waiting for, you know, all hell to break loose on the Unite the Right 2 rally in Washington, D.C. They decided to have it right across the street from the White House. I don't know how they figured they'd get away with that, with this president of ours who's, as you can tell, just looking at his behaviors and his actions, if not his hiring practices, he's the least racist person ever. But so, you know, the idea, I think they had permitted for 400 neo-Nazis and skinheads and white nationalists.
Oh, no, not officially. We're not aligned with them. Although,
right.
When you put the speaker list, too, they were neo-Nazis.
Right.
So.
So they were expecting 400, and they drew,
less than 40.
24. It was about two dozen people.
Maybe a little more.
Two dozen.
Yes, two dozen hundred.
Okay.
So it was between two dozen and 40 that they actually had come out to, you know, I think people last year after... you know, they all showed up in their white shirts and no masks, which was really the most surprising part of their decision, their decor at the Unite the Right rally, the first one. They were just like, this is cool now, right? Everyone, we're good.
Hey, we're all the right.
And then a bunch of them got fired.
What do you mean I can't come in on
their
Monday?
Communities as being hateful racists. And now that apparently did. People weren't fond of how that went down.
No,
because
that's
nobody
just
showed up.
Completely tanked. I mean, not that like there was any stock or social cachet with being a white nationalist, but like people were definitely like, "Yo, I can't be out here like that. Like, I'm not that down with it." I mean, because I think he could only find about 30 people who are that ignorant and shameless to go out and be like, "Yeah, we're fucking here for the Unite the Right too."
Right.
The counter protesters, however, they came out in the thousands.
Right.
So you know, it's very clear that. I think, you know, one is less meaningful, let's say, less sexy to the general public. But I think Jason Kessler, man, he's had a lot of problems, too, because the other thing that this whole failure of the Unite the Right rally shows is there's a lot of fracturing going on in this whole alt-right community where, like, they don't know who to follow, who actually is the leader. Half of them are getting scrubbed off of Twitter and things like that. So it's become very fractured. And Jason Kessler, like, he's burned a lot of bridges in the neo-Nazi community, because there are people like on Gab, their like, you know, chat site that they can talk shit on. They were all being like, no, this guy has no manpower. No one follows him anymore. Like, I advise you to not go. It's going to be dangerous. And, you know, he's also like, he hasn't been able to fundraise like on any kind of website that like makes it easier to collect funds from people. So he's basically limited to like cash and check donations. So he's has less and less organizing power. And so it was kind of like on Right Wing Watch, our boy Jared Holt was always saying like, this is probably going to be a flop just from the onset based on how nobody's really like with each other on the same side anymore compared to last year because of all the
fallout. Jason Kessler was the guy who organized the last year's
Charlottesville
rally.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the problem with your movement being fully obsessed with categorizing people and hating them.
Right.
Like, you're going to have some divisions that open up, and some of those people aren't going to be fully on board with your type of white nationalism.
One of the white nationalists or neo-Nazis was mad because Jason Kessler had like a non-white person working like at a higher level with him.
Right.
And he's like, not to mention that like there's not even all white people in his organization.
Right.
Yeah. So
something I didn't realize, Richard Spencer, who likes to focus his brand of white nationalism and white supremacy on claiming that it's like all about European culture and like different people coming from European nations and having something special. I didn't realize that over the past year he has been banned from like most European countries.
Yeah, he can't
He's
get
like
in
not allowed to go there.
A lot of those people can't.
Yeah, people are kind of running away from this movement.
That's how fractured it is, by the way, is that so few people want to join the movement that they have to hire minorities in order to fill these white positions.
Right.
It's like not even white people want this job. Yeah.
As the movie Black Klansman shows, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that the plot of that?
The other aspect of this is, you know, last year they had a lot of like paramilitary, they had militias like pull up at the Unite the Right thing, like Oath Keepers and stuff like that to, you know, protect them. And you could see like that site was pretty out there when you saw all these dudes in this tactical gear and being like, yeah, we're aligned with this group. But because of that fallout, those militias have even like pulled away from kind of being out there because the optics like aren't really helping them.
Right.
And I was reading this piece, which is kind of interesting, is like how the militias have kind of lost their way now that Trump is president. Because even with like Bush 2 and Clinton and Obama, they were able to like have this like, it's this like neo-globalist, you know, conspiracy to bleed America dry and blah, blah, blah. And like, so we got to be ready. And like, so when Trump was running, they were all like, yeah, this is our guy. This is our guy. And a lot of analysts were like, if Hillary Clinton wins, I think we need to really be prepared for what the fallout is going to look like with these militias and things like that.
Right.
But then he won, and now they're kind of like have an identity crisis because they're like, wait, our guy is in power. So what do we
– Yeah.
How Who we, do we hate?
Yeah, and like, and they were sort of tracking it. Like first it was Antifa because then it was easy to be like, oh, yeah, okay, we're diametrically opposed. And then that kind of fell off. So then it was immigrants, then Muslims. And now the new thing is they're just obsessed with the Civil War.
Yeah.
Like, that's the next thing that they've given themselves. Like, well, okay, we got to be ready for this, like, libs versus conservatives race war.
Drudge was trying to popularize the whole Antifa thing yesterday because, like, a lot of the top headlines were like, it's getting ugly out there. And then it would be, like, a video of Antifa, like, pushing a camera away or something like
right,
that.
Right, right, so, right. And then a lot of places were writing that shit up, like, in the coverage of this, like, of open white supremacy in this country. They're getting mad at like Antifa for clashing with like other, like when you saw like in Portland a few weeks ago, the police definitely, from what I saw and like what the reporting was, they seemed to be much more aggressive with like the counter protesters than they were with like the white nationalists. And a lot of the coverage is more focused on what they're doing rather than these white nationalists who are out here, you know, spreading all this hatred. So the coverage of it was a little odd to me too. From some places, not everybody, but
yeah. And I mean, I think there's also a sense in which they overplayed their hand a little bit. Like, I mean, there are people who are invigorated by Trump's, you know, election and feeling like, okay, now I can, you know, let my racist inner thoughts and feelings out into the open. And they did that last year and they sort of overplayed their hand. And, you know, a lot of them got fired from their jobs. And,
right.
You know, there, I think there's also Like when you watched that Vice documentary last year with that guy who was like, yeah, man, we got
Nazi?
All the guns and we got all this. And like, you know, just talking with his chest out like he was about to go whoop some ass and was very, you know, angry and seemed sure of himself. And then the next video we saw of him, he was weeping and being like, I'm so scared. Please don't hurt me about the cops because he got in trouble for being openly violent. I just feel like when your movement is about violence and a very, very limited worldview, you're not going to have very stable leadership a lot of the time.
Oh, no, yeah.
And there's another guy who was very, I forget where the article was, but it was a guy who wrote for, you know, a mainstream outlet who used this right-wing kind of mainstay as a source. And over the past year, that source disappeared because he actually stabbed his father to death. Like,
And, was that the guy in Oregon?
Yeah.
Right.
Or Washington State,
or Washington,
I think.
Right. Pacific, yeah. Northwest, right.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, so a lot of these people who were big personalities and who were, you know, out there pushing this point of view, they don't last long in the public eye for any number of reasons,
yeah.
I guess.
Well, and it just shows you that the rallying, like the thing that brings them together is literal hatred,
right,
and violence.
Right. Right.
That's not, most people are pretty chill.
Right.
You know, they're not wired. Like, you know, you'll have people who are very angry and you can get those people. But you look at the counter protesters, they rally around the idea of inclusion and unity and like empathy. That's a much more broader audience for that,
right,
than like, hey man, you fucking hate immigrants, man, and you're ready,
right,
to fucking beat some people.
Right.
Like, yo, no. Like, not, right, really. I'm not that. Like, I'd rather just, you know, shame some racists.
Right. It's harder to get behind that point of view now more than ever because you can't burn all the books. Like in our, you know, there's still the internet, and like eventually, like the internet can be bad if you just get into like one small group where everybody's talking crazy. But like eventually you can go out and do your own research, and doesn't look good. There's also Stephen Miller's uncle just published an article where it's almost surprising how basic it was. He was just like, hey, so our great-grandfather came here because of, you know, there were anti-Semitic programs and, like, he was trying to escape, like, just horrible treatment in his home country, and he came through Ellis Island, and then he, like, worked and paid for his, you know, to pay your great-grandfather to, like, come over, and it's basically chain migration. And he's like, so how are you going to... It's just, like,
yeah,
this ideology that these groups and that like your Stephen Millers of the world kind of espouse is just like so transparently just like it doesn't hold up under,
yeah,
scrutiny that I don't know. It seems like every time they just get put down, or, you know, every time someone points out the insanity of their argument, it's like, yeah, that's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
Turns out.
And that whole letter is like, he's just like, I'm ashamed of him. Like,
yeah.
He knows better.
Yeah.
Like, and like the thing that was really to that point is like, he points out that Stephen Miller is well aware of their family's history. Like,
oh, yeah.
From coming from,
yeah,
like a shtetl in what is now Belarus, like to coming here. And the article is almost like, my man, how the,
right,
fuck are you even thinking like this, knowing our family's history?
Right.
Like, that, this exact kind of policy that could have gotten, you know, our ancestors killed, and we wouldn't even fucking be here. You wouldn't,
right,
even be at Santa Monica High School being like, I think the janitors need to speak English.
Right.
Anybody with me? And that's why I'm running for student president, which was like one of his speeches that he made.
Yeah. But
Jesus
Christ.
Legendary YouTube clip of him in high school.
Yeah. I mean, the cowardice of like getting over the wall from like a danger and like pulling the ladder up behind you is... Yeah, it's just obvious. It's,
yeah,
like, yeah, man, that's not a good look.
And I don't think they ever cared that it would be a good look, you know, or even thought that, like, that's, like, the most infuriating part of all of this. It's like, yeah, he doesn't care. Like, he knows that his family comes from a long line of immigrants. He doesn't care. Like, he pulled the rope back. You know,
right,
what I mean?
Right.
Like, this is just what's going to keep happening.
Right.
And when he gets called, like, oh, yeah, oh, by the way, what you do is illogical. It's like, yeah, obviously it's illogical. None of it is logical. Hate is not logical. It's just all self-serving things. And I don't think this will, like, oh, Stephen Miller's not a great guy. Holy shit.
Right, right, right.
You know what I mean? Thank you, Uncle Miller.
Right.
It's like, yeah, I think most people who come to America, like, you know, when you ask all these people, I think pretty much everyone has a backstory about, oh yeah, they came here for a better opportunity at some point. Even if you're one of these daughters of the revolution type people,
right.
Like there are people still coming here because they're like, oh, I'm not feeling this place. I'm coming here, and this will offer me that opportunity. But it's easy to forget that. I think the only person who came to America and just to not escape anything bad was Prince Akeem in coming to America.
Right. Yes.
Because he was just looking for a shorty.
Right.
Thank you, King Shit.
Yeah. That's thank you, Prince that. Akeem.
King
and Semi.
Shit. yes, fuck you too. So from the really obvious white supremacy to the less obvious, we wanted to talk about this article that when you read the headline and all it's basically when you read every word of it, it really seems like a piece of just on the nose satire.
Yeah.
So it's an article from an American food columnist writing in Philadelphia Magazine, and it's called How Millennials Killed Mayonnaise.
Yummy.
The subhead is The Inexorable Rise of Identity Condiments Has Led to Hard Times for the Most American of Foodstuffs. And that's a shame.
And then there's an animation of a guy in like Bose headphones just stabbing it with a spreadable knife. And the Hellman spraying everywhere.
Yeah. So we start with a rundown of how she's noticed that people stopped eating her dishes at family barbecues.
Mm-hmm.
And from that, she draws the conclusion that it's because of identity politics and because millennials don't think mayonnaise is lit. I guess.
Exactly.
She writes, about a decade ago, though, I began to notice I was toting home as much of my offerings as I'd concocted. My contributions were being overlooked or shunned.
Oh, my.
So it's a deliberate shunning of her mayonnaise-based dishes.
She seems fun to invite to a barbecue.
Oh, yeah.
With a little tally.
Hey, why aren't you eating that potato salad?
Right.
Why aren't you eating that pasta salad?
Why aren't you eating that?
Yeah, what about your politics makes you not like my food?
What? Yeah, and it's just, she's so...
I'm six.
It's so transparent because on one hand, it could be, I still am struggling to know if this is slightly satirical, but also there are other points that she makes that sounds like a very upset mother who is realizing that her kids are getting older, they don't think she's cool anymore, and mayonnaise sucks, and that is actually like some kind of metaphor for what else is going on, because she breaks down the fucking history,
yeah.
The history of mayonnaise.
She goes into this deep historical reading of why mayonnaise used to be so important to, quote, us as, quote, Americans, because we were, quote, strivers. Mayo-America-naise again is what we came up with.
Go.
Am I right?
Oh, that's
there
really good.
Yeah, that's really good. All
that's
right,
very
let's
good.
Print that on a shirt.
Yes. Done and done. Can we just end
a
the episode
white
there?
Shirt.
Yeah.
You can't see the text.
But yeah, she writes about how America in the 1950s was full of strivers like mom, desperate to forget family legacies of latkes and boxties and I'm going to mispronounce all this shit, but basically just saying that we were trying to leave behind our ethnicities for a more like American, uniform, homogeneous type of lifestyle.
Right.
And she literally says the word like homogeneity in here.
Yeah.
Like that's what we used to be striving for. And
what the
now
fuck happened?
Now we all want these like different. She keeps referring to things as like exotic. That's how she's describing like sriracha.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Sriracha. And then she gets into the personalities of, you know, what's really at stake.
What's
for
really
her.
Going on here? Yeah.
Yeah. My son Jake, who's 25, eats mayo. He's a practical young man who works in computers and adores macaroni salad. Incel. He's a good son. I also have a daughter. She was a women's and gender studies major in college. Naturally, she loathes mayonnaise.
Okay, hold
and
on.
And she's not alone.
What?
Naturally.
What do you mean, naturally?
Right.
Right.
Well, that's typical.
Well, you know how feminists hate that condiment.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
Everyone's on board, right?
Yeah.
I don't... that's where you start to see, oh, you're becoming very transparent now.
Yeah.
There's your son.
Right.
Who likes the mayonnaise.
Mm-hmm.
He's a good boy. Your wacky, woke-ass daughter who went off to college to learn about some weird shit like gender is fluid or some nonsense. She don't fuck with mayonnaise.
Right.
Because she's evil. She's the devil.
Yeah. And
of course not.
It's, yeah, her understanding of her daughter is that she hates mayonnaise because it's not, like, exotic enough, because she can only understand foreign things and other identities as, like, exotic.
Right.
And that's, like, the only value they could have to people who embrace them. It can't be because mayonnaise is larded egg yolk and salt jelly, you know, that literally looks like the stuff you like clear out of arteries when you're like trying to save somebody's life. She just thinks it has to be this like knee-jerk, frivolous desire for the exotic.
Literally what killed mayonnaise is aioli. Is 100,000 fucking percent what killed that condiment.
No, because
it's
she's
just
got
better.
Ideas. No, that's not it. Let me tell you why, according to her. She says, young people like my daughter seem to have extrapolated this masking function of mayonnaise from condiment to culture. For them, mayo quite literally whitewashed America's immigrants into eating dull food. And newer generations are refusing to meekly fall in line with a culinary heritage that was never theirs. Instead, they're gobbing up kefir and chimichurri and gochujang again.
Right.
And then she goes, it's like, they're also shunning their parents' preferred restaurants, Applebee's, Ruby Tuesday, TGI Fridays,
right,
to seek out more authentic fare. And then this is where you get to it. It's obvious to me that this condimental divide can be traced to young folks' rejection of what they sneeringly consider a boring white food. Do you think 23andMe and MyHeritage and all those other DNA testing companies are flourishing because people want to know that their ancestors came from Aberdeen? Hells no. I don't, hells no.
Hells no, she writes.
Wait, did she
literally
actually
hells
write?
No.
I thought that was a little improv by you.
No,
she
hells
on,
no.
That's in text.
This is all verbatim. They want to be, and she writes it like a wannabe, like if you want to be my lover, not want to be. They want to
be
from Marrakesh or Manchuria or Malawi. It's the same with condiments. I'm not part of the elderly mayo masses. I'm Turkey and Swiss on ciabatta with tzatziki, chipotle spread, and a little basil pesto. That's who I am, damn it. My sandwich, myself.
I don't like new
myself.
Good shit.
Right.
Yeah.
By the way, also the most exotic food sandwich she can come up with is Turkey and Swiss. But it's on ciabatta, so I mean, pretty out there.
She's
stuff.
Like, what's that? Oh, Italian bread? Ooh.
Right. Yeah, she spends a lot of time on the white European roots of mayonnaise, and there is interesting stuff in here about mayonnaise. Like, as a food, like, tasters and food critics respect it. They say, like, all the flavors blend together. It's perfectly balanced. Nothing sticks out.
Right.
Everything is appropriate. And then she writes after that quote, italics, nothing sticks out. Mayonnaise isn't bland, it's artfully blended. It's an evocation of the era I grew up in, of the homogeneity of that old dead American dream. So nothing sticks out, key. We don't want people who
stick out.
We want something that is homogeneous and white.
And white.
Right.
Imagine going into an art. What if she has no, like, she's not trying to have any thinly veiled message under
right.
this. In her mind, she's just writing an article making fun of millennials. And then all of a sudden she's like, wait, what do you mean I'm a racist? Like, this
right.
is how she finds
what?
Out.
Whoa,
how did people have this? Oh, my God, I guess it is there.
I guess I do hate my daughter.
Yeah, Jesus.
Huh. Because I can clearly see that what happened was they went to this outing. And her macaroni salad and potato salad just sat there because it's probably whack anyway. And
right.
she's going, how come you're not eating it? How come you're not eating it? And her daughter goes, Mom, stop like pushing people to eat your macaroni salad. Like, they'll just eat what they want to.
It's also interesting.
And my female daughter. It's
no,
like,
right.
why'd you call
and
her
then,
a female
and then
daughter?
And then her daughter probably goes, look, Mom, mayonnaise is just gross. And, you know, that's something you wanted to do. It's old timey. And like, we're just into other stuff. And she went, oh, excuse you, gender
right.
studies psycho?
That is your cultural inheritance, mayonnaise. which sucks if that's literally what you think about your culture.
I mean,
but
she gets angry at the other thing.
Oh, she's fired.
They're
up.
Talking about it like, oh, I wonder what could have happened. She's like, she points out all these BuzzFeed articles that were talking shit about mayonnaise, and then she's like, this one professor said it was too disgusting to ingest. Described it. Then she puts in a quote from another article. She says its viscous quality is the sort of thickness that you'd get from fluid oozing out of a rotted carcass. And then the quote goes on. She starts her paragraph. This is bullshit. This attitude comes to you from young people who willingly slurp down 8 gazillion kinds of yogurt, not to mention raw fish and pork belly and, yo, detergent pods? So don't talk to me about mayonnaise. It has to be satire, right?
I don't know, man.
We're going to be so embarrassed if it is.
I know. Like,
oh,
I
shit,
won't be. I will just tip my hat to her.
I will.
Oh.
Yeah.
Because I
well,
can,
I will.
Without knowing, my
standards.
Analysis is this is actually great. Like, for it to be from the perspective
it's a great
of this.
Work of satire.
Yeah. This
intentional
mother.
Intentional or not.
Yeah.
Right.
This mother who has her mayonnaise based existence is a threat, it's being threatened by millennials. And then she goes into this other part. She goes, and this is where I, you know, it could be satire because there are all these parallels to like our political discourse now. But she says, quote, I thought young people today were supposed to be all about inclusion, about kindness and compassion and making other people feel welcome. So how about you include a little mayo in your picnic fare? And it goes down a little bit. And she says, just because something is old and white doesn't mean it's obsolete. Look at Shakespeare. Look at me.
Uh-huh. Mm. Look at me, though. Really see me. And then, so all of this goes back to an observation that she made because people weren't eating her potato salad. When you read the first paragraph through again, it seems that people stopped eating it after she makes the point that it was her mother's recipe that she passed down to her. And it seems like people stopped eating it when she started making it. So maybe she's just like not good at making the potato
she's
salad.
Fucking it up.
And people are just like, we're not really into mayonnaise anymore, I guess, is what will make you stop talking about this.
I substitute the potatoes for plums, and people have been having an issue with it for some reason.
Right.
Yeah. You know, this plum mayonnaise salad?
Yeah.
Mm.
So.
And I can't get, I would hope, I looked on her Twitter. I'm trying to find out if this is satirical. Mm-hmm. Her last tweet was about her posting her mom's macaroni salad recipe. She says, there have been a lot of requests for this. We boomers are nothing if not accommodating.
Macaroni salad. I'm fine with mayonnaise on a sandwich. Mayonnaise, like, my wife hates it. I am fine with it. But macaroni salad is fucking gross, guys. Come on.
I'll eat macaroni salad.
Get out of here.
I fuck with mayonnaise. No. Okay.
Okay.
See you guys.
No. Oh, okay. Well, if it's a job for me, welcome back to the DZ.
Going around this table, is anyone in this room staunchly opposed to mayonnaise in general, conceptually?
No.
Right?
No, not at all.
Everyone I'm looking at, no? Super duper. Okay, super producer Nick Stump just said he thinks it's pretty nasty. Okay.
Yeah, but you're a millennial.
Anne Hosnier, don't pantomime shooting him. Do you? You love it. Do you? I'm not against mayonnaise. I fuck with mayonnaise. Like, yeah. I'll eat macaroni salad. I'm disgusting.
I will ask for it not to be on a sandwich, but if it comes on the sandwich, I'll be like, fine. You know, like, I won't even, yeah.
Oh, so you don't seek out mayonnaise.
I do not.
So you try to avoid it when possible.
Yeah, but I won't. Okay. Yeah, it won't ruin my day.
Right. But I think maybe this, you're the kind of millennials he's talking about here. You're one of these male phobes.
Male phobe.
Anyway, everyone should be using QP mayonnaise, Japanese mayonnaise. That's the way.
Exotic mayonnaise.
Hey, you know,
I
she,
get it.
You know what? But she calls
Eastern
it out.
Eastern mayo.
She calls it. Eastern mayo. She calls it out in this article, though, of like things that are like new wavy mayonnaise that people should still be fucking with. So,
right.
In that way, Susan, I'm with, or Sandy Hingston, I'm with you. But then her Twitter, I was going through her Twitter. There's like a photo with her and all these other like older baby boomer white women. She's like, vacation in New Hampshire with all my middle school best friends, and it looks like whatever the mayonnaise Illuminati.
Amazing.
Like where they gather and they set forth the agenda for big mayonnaise.
She just like is tweeting heart emojis at Heinz. You know,
nearly.
That's her whole
Twitter. She really goes all in for Hellman's in this article too. And a lot of it really is like wrapped up in her mother and her father too. She talks about how much her father loved Hellman's. So there are times where it's a very real, like, as a piece of satire, it would be great because it would come off as this person who's completely unaware of what they're saying. But also, I don't know. I'm still struggling with what this actually is.
And also, her whole ancestors and familial heritage, like, this just goes to, name one thing about your grandfather that you love so much.
He loved mayonnaise.
That's the first thing. Not that he was a good, you know, loving family member.
His stance towards mayonnaise.
Yeah,
mostly that.
A decorated Navy pilot? I don't know.
I don't know for sure. What I do know is that he loved mayonnaise.
Oh.
And I mean, this is not to deny in any way that there is such a thing as like political taste in food. I mean, the first comparison to America is American as apple pie. And one of the things she calls out is she's like, these millennials are scared of mayonnaise for health reasons, but they'll eat raw fish.
Right.
Like she can't deal with the idea of sushi and the fact that it's healthy. Yeah, I don't know. This is what conservatism is at its core, is conserving tastes, conserving ideals.
Right. It's the kind of thing where a dude would be like, I ain't doing no yoga.
Right.
That's some freaky shit.
Right.
I'm going to fucking just lift some weights, man.
Right.
Leave me alone. I ain't do no Pilates. What am I, fucking weirdo?
It happens in sports, too, where, like, soccer still hasn't totally caught on because
right.
people see that as like a European.
Yeah,
you know,
they just fall down all the time.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah.
Dude, try and fucking kick a ball that hard, motherfucker.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm telling you, if the thing that really
hockey
got,
too is
yeah,
another one.
The second you try and actually do what you see on screen is the second those people begin respecting that as a sport because
yeah.
you can't run at full speed with a ball and not look weird or like control it. Anyway, I can get the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it is true that even with food or whatever, where someone will be like, you know, there's some burger and they're like, can I not get the whatever Chipotle blah, blah, blah on there? I like it plain.
Right.
Like, yeah.
You're not going to turn into a liberal all of a sudden because you ate food from another country. And I
you
think
won't start caring about other people all of a sudden,
yeah.
you know? God for fucking bit.
But I do think taste is, like, there's a reason we call our preferences for all things taste. Is it really, like, it mm-hmm. is the first mm-hmm. thing that we have personal almost cultural preferences for. So
yeah, but now everything is Asian.
Right.
Everything is fusion or Asian.
Right.
You know, you get tacos, they're Asian now.
This yeah. Korea, it's a town now. There's a Chinatown.
It's weird. I don't know.
Right. Ugh. So
everything is Asian.
I don't have a passport.
Yeah. I don't need one.
I don't need one.
I don't need one.
I'm not going anywhere.
I'm
I live
good.
In the best place in the world.
Right. Well, yeah, one way or another, there's a reason we've talked more about this article than any single article in the history of the show.
This,
it is the perfect
article. She captured the zeitgeist
yes.
in one
yeah.
article, and I'm just going to tweet at her right now. I'll go, yo, is this satire?
Hey, your job, I can't tell how you do your job. What are you being serious or kidding?
All right, we're going to take a quick break to wait for a response from her. We'll be right back. And we're back. And Brett Kavanaugh.
Yes.
So this dude was nominated for the Supreme Court when was that? Like a couple years ago? It seems
like a month ago.
No yeah. way to know for sure.
Yeah.
So
it's 2019, right? Right now.
Right. So his confirmation hearing is probably going to be happening in the next couple months. And
soon. I mean, they won't even let the archives release all the documents he's tied to.
Yeah,
because,
I wonder why.
Oh, well, yeah. He had his hands in all kinds of shit. Meanwhile, I just have to point out, when Elena Kagan was up for a nomination, the conservatives got every single fucking document they had to hold that shit up.
Right.
But for whatever reason now, we don't know.
Right.
Mostly because this is the dude who, if it goes to the Supreme Court of whether or not the president can be subpoenaed or has to cooperate in this investigation, he's going to be the one who's like, nah, fam.
Right. He's very pro executive power when that executive is not Bill Clinton.
Very pro baseball too.
Right. So
vehemently
yeah.
pro baseball.
Yeah.
So he had racked up $200,000 in debt buying Washington Nationals tickets, which seems like a weird thing you would hear about on like a hoarder's show. Like
right.
it's just this like bizarre preference,
unhealthy
OCD,
thing, yeah.
like
he's a sadist.
He's just like buying like a bunch of seats, like doesn't even use them
yeah.
or something. Because you looked up how much national season tickets
for
cost.
The inside dugout club, which would like the highest selectable ticket plan for the Nationals was $6,500 for a season.
$6,500. And
for
he
one
racked
season.
Up $200,000,
like over like 10 years.
But
still, even if you had two season tickets
right.
for 10 years, that would be 120.
And didn't pay at all for them? Like,
well, this is the thing. So the Washington Post first reported about it. And so they asked the White House, they're like, yo, what's good? Why is this man spending so much money on tickets? And Raj Shah responded. He was saying like, yeah, he goes to a games with a, quote, handful of friends. And like these friends then reimbursed him for the tickets. And all the debts have been paid off, which is probably true. I think they found this through like other documents or whatever. But that may be fine, but yo, who is he going with? And who is he schmoozing with? And is that going to lead to some conflict of interest? What kind of tax shit is he doing? Like, is he trying to show this as a... they don't know. It's just a weird thing for that much money to be spent
right.
on the Washington Nationals.
Just poor decision making as well. You know, just like, why are you spending... And he didn't have to sit there.
I know. It also yeah. is so childish.
It's so silly.
Like,
it's
yeah.
so... That's maybe, what I yeah. would do with my... like. if I had that money, that's what I would do with that money. And I shouldn't be a Supreme Court justice because I make decisions like that.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just picture him with a foam finger at the game like that. That sort of fandom, just like just
a little
there,
baseball
like,
helmet with yeah, ice cream in yeah, it, and exactly. He spills it on his robes.
Yeah.
He has to wear it. Yeah, he has to wear the robe out in public.
Right.
Well, in the
someone thinks he's a mascot and races him down the field with those fucking presidents or whatever. Right,
right. It's Justice Speed. Run as fast as you can. But yeah, they ProPublica was also putting out a piece where they're like, "Did you go to a Nationals game with a Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh? Like, we need to know what the fuck is going on with this because they just they're like there has he got some splaining to do.
Yeah,
and." In the article, they're like, they go down, they're like, here's what we do know. It's kind of funny. We know he bought season tickets at the end of 2016, likely for the 2017 season. He also bought tickets to some playoff games. He might not have been sitting in the same seats for those. He has reportedly gone to games in the past with U.S. District Judge James E. Boasberg, an Obama nominee who is his ex-roommate from law school. He's been photographed at least twice wearing blue-striped polo shirts.
So have cool. you seen this man yeah. at a Nationals game?
Were the
game?
Stripes vertical?
Have you seen
horizontal?
A middle-aged white man at a baseball game wearing a blue-striped polo shirt? If so, contact ProPublica immediately.
And that was the end of that publication.
Yeah. But I think there's his daughter sitting next to him. This photo they do have of him. She looks bored out of her fucking mind.
Jesus.
Oh, poor kid.
It looks like a kid yeah. who was dragged to a baseball game.
Although, when I was back east hanging out with my dad, he was watching a lot of baseball, and I'm now... Just I'm back into baseball as background noise. Just having it on, is
yeah,
just great just thing on. To have.
You
on.
Can tune
yeah.
in and out. It's great,
completely. So,
all right,
yeah.
So Nationals, holler at Jack for
yeah, exactly. So Peter Strzok was fired. Apparently, this was not. You know, they asked the FBI somebody who would know how you should handle the things that he did wrong.
Termination, yeah, whatever.
Yeah. And he was like, yeah, he should be demoted and suspended for, I think, a few months.
Right, and have a disciplinary hearing, too.
Right.
And which he didn't have.
Instead of doing that, they just fired him.
And Peter Strzok is the guy who had the text messages that, the you know, everyone on the GOP tries to be like, we're going to stop him. And they're like, you see, the FBI has been against him, man, the deep state, blah, blah, blah.
Right, right.
And then he
one
went,
guy.
Yeah, then he went to the hearing in front of the House Intel Committee and just owned everybody. Like, he was just like, nah, fam, like, I'm not a partisan. I said that because of these things, because the president is dangerous in these ways. But yeah, now he's fired. So that doesn't smack of a politically motivated firing at all.
So he was taken off the Mueller investigation, right?
Yeah.
Like, and then just put back into the FBI,
yeah, so
and then they still fired him? Oh, that's... Yeah,
yeah,
it was fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, he was taken off the Mueller yeah. team, and then...
They were doing the right thing. They demoted him. They took him off the thing where there was a conflict of interest, and then... They just fired him, what, it was today, right?
Yeah.
Or, I think, yeah, we found out today, but he was told, I think, Friday. They're
Jesus
like, you're going to be fired.
I thought he had already been fired, but that was Andrew McCabe, who's the other.
It's hard to keep track of all the FBI people that have been fired.
There's been a lot.
Yeah.
And finally, just wanted to give a shout out to my fellow lefties. Mm. It is International Left-Handed Persons Day.
Okay.
They've got to have a better name than that. But, yeah, well, I think left-handedness is interesting. I write and do like small things lefty and then play sports and do big things righty. But
wait, you throw left-handed?
Yeah. No, I throw righty. I write.
Oh, you throw. Oh, right. You write left-handed.
Do small things lefty.
But
and
you,
then,
your golf
so
swing?
So basically, I have all the disadvantages of being lefty, but none of the advantages. Because
right.
like being lefty in sports is great.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah, southpaw, you
know,
yeah.
Yeah.
You don't have to play catcher.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're awkward to... Mm-hmm. guard in basketball.
Right, right.
But yeah, I think left-handedness is interesting. Like, six of the last 13 presidents were left-handed, even though we only make up 10% of the population. Steve Jobs and Bill Gates are lefty. I think it's there's a theory that dyslexic people are a larger portion of the like billionaire entrepreneur population than they should be. Like, you know, they only make up a small percentage of the population, but it's like 20% of billionaire entrepreneurs are dyslexic. And the theory on that is that because you're dyslexic, you have to like learn these like hacks to get through life, like different ways to like approach problems. And that contributes to...
What kind of hacks are you coming up with? Like being like, hi, I have to sit at the end of the table during this meal so my elbow doesn't hit yours. That's
well,
not a fucking hack.
Yeah, you have to learn how to... use scissors differently. You have to learn how to, like, my writing, I have to, like, curl my arm all the way around. Your mind is just programmed differently. I think it's just a very mild form of that, essentially.
Well, my mom's left-handed, and the only thing that I really took from that is she would always be like, I have to sit at the end of the table.
Yeah.
Because her elbow would be hitting people. And that was it.
It's also the best seat at the table.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She might have just started using her left hand to sit at the end of the table. I don't know, really.
All power to her. That's great.
Because I caught her writing with her right the other day. Anyway, that's another podcast.
That's called a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun. Blake, it's been a pleasure having you.
Thank you.
Where can people find you, follow you?
BlakeWexler.com, at Blake Wexler on social media. My next album comes out September 7th. It's called Stuffed Boy, and I think you can get it the week before pre-order. And I'm going to be at the Petaluma Comedy Festival this weekend in Petaluma, California.
Nice.
So, yeah, sweet. Doing a couple shows.
And is there a tweet that you've been enjoying?
Yeah, my friend and also a very funny comic, Chris Fleming, tweeted something, and he's at Chris Fleming, Fluming, and he wrote, if you really want to panic, listen to Elton John trying to end Benny and the Jets.
I love that tweet. Benny! Just desperately.
How do I do this?
Miles.
Yeah.
Where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Miles of Gray, and a tweet that I laughed at was more of a video of Justin Bieber dancing real weird, like locking and shit at the show. But someone like retweeted the video and said, Justin Bieber danced like a downtown Oakland crackhead. And it looks like he's got like the washed old man like locking. It's weird. It looks like a guy whose ego has betrayed his actual sense, like to give himself an objective idea of how well he can dance.
Amazing. Right?
And he's just too gassed up. And it's just like, okay, all right, Justin.
He's past the point of no return.
It's like, I'm dancing bad on purpose.
Yeah, because I got Christ in my veins.
A tweet I enjoyed was from Johnny Sun, who tweeted, you agree to have your year sorted algorithmically instead of chronologically. You experience all your most exciting and memorable moments first. The algorithm hides all your negative and lackluster ones. Your entire year is 4 days long. You suddenly have no idea who you are. I think it's a good description of how social media works.
Yeah.
We should also shout out our friend who put us onto that mayonnaise piece. For Without You, Zeit Gang, we would not be talking about that article.
Shout out to Betamax999, Chris Perkins. Great.
See, there you go.
Great find, dude.
That was good, man. It's not often. You come with the fire. Mayonnaise takes.
And you can follow me on Twitter at Jack_O'Brien. You can follow us on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes. And we also post the footnotes in the description of the episode. If you just click the little thing on wherever you're listening to it, the little information thing, you should be able to see our footnotes. And footnotes are where we link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as the song that we ride out on. Miles, what's that gonna be?
Going out on a track by Mareba. It's a Ninth Wonder produced song called Black Truck. And it's nice, you know, got the intro going and then the beat drops in and it just works very well. And I think she's from Alabama, but she's on the come up.
Were you listening to that this morning?
I was.
It is good. It is good, people. All right, we're going to ride out on that. We will be back tomorrow because it is a daily podcast. Talk to you guys then. Bye.
Mayo.
Spine. And I said, world, would you please have some mercy on me? Or could you please lift a curse that's on me? I said, you always did, like at the hard way since you was a kid. Look at the scars on your legs, you. You keep choosing the wild road. They sick cause I follow my gut. They say I was pushing my luck. I'ma push me a matte all black truck. Oh, I'm not sorry. Stay sick cause I follow my gut. They say I was pushing my luck. I'ma push me a all black truck. I'ma push me a all black. Now I'ma push me a mat up. I've been through the storm. I've heard thunder in my heart. And I've said, world, would you please shine a light upon me? Show me a sign you love me. You always did. Like at the heart, way since you was a kid. Time after time again. You keep choosing the wild road. Sorry. Stay sick cause I follow my gut. They say I was pushing my luck. I'ma push me a matte all black truck. Oh, I'm not sorry. Stay sick cause I follow my gut. They say I was pushing my luck. I'ma push me a all black truck. Push me a all black truck. I'ma push me a matte all black truck. Stay sick cause I follow my gut. They say I was pushing my luck. Now I'ma push me a matte all black truck.